The Metal AI Podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Felix Beecher, and this is the Medical AI Podcast, a 30-minute thrill ride of big ideas. We talk to a range of top guests, from industry innovators to scientists to philosophers. One US study reported that 54% of physicians had at least one symptom of burnout. And that is dangerous because burnout has been shown to sometimes lead to decreased productivity, medical errors, and even hostile attitudes towards patients. Well, one part of lightening the load of physicians might involve the use of AI systems to perform basic everyday tasks that physicians have to do. And to discuss one example of this is Vince Hartmann, CEO and co-founder of Abstractive Health. Vince, a very, very warm welcome to you.
Thank you. Very good to be here today.
So, Vince, could you please just introduce yourself and explain a little bit about what Abstractive Health does?
Yeah, I would love to. So I've myself been in healthcare 10 years now. So I started my journey at Epic for 2 years, and then I was a consultant for another six. I traveled around the United States to a number of hospitals, and I personally saw physicians struggle with physician burnout using electronic medical records, and then just didn't have enough time to read and write their clinical notes. I decided it was best for me to go back to grad school and focus on solving this problem, and I did my research on natural language processing. I did it at Cornell Tech. For 2 years, I formed a partnership with Weill Cornell Medicine. I met my two co-founders during that time, and based on our research at Cornell, we created the company Abstractive Health and spun it out last year. And so we have been focused on summarizing the clinical chart so that physicians can read those notes faster.
Okay, could you give an example of how an overloaded physician not paying enough attention to medical notes, you know, what kind of impact in the real world can that have?
Yeah, it's quite huge. So there's a number of studies that have shown that physicians, they only have 3 minutes to review the patient chart nowadays. They have been burdened with too many patients that they have to see, mainly because of insurance reasons. And they will only have about, like, overall 10 to 15 minutes with the patient. So 3 minutes before the visit to understand who you are. And then when you're in the exam room, then they're mainly on the computer and spending most of their time in front of that computer. And so the patient doesn't feel that they're getting their symptoms addressed. The physician is focused on this computer, and that's mainly like the overarching reason that we're encountering physician burnout in the United States.
And is it possible to put some numbers on the economic impact of physician burnout and the impact on care?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of like some good numbers. So like there's been some studies that have shown that physicians, after they do their like 10, 12-hour workday, they still have to go home and do what's known as pajama time. And they're spending excessive amounts of time mainly using the electronic health records. There's been, because physicians can't find all of the clinical information in the medical chart, there's studies that show that they're missing out on potential revenue of upwards of billions of dollars that would help them in terms of their billing. So both revenue loss from the physician standpoint and like extension of way too much time on the like medical chart.
And so this idea of this notion of physician burnout. Is it particularly a problem for certain areas of medicine, or is it a very general problem?
Yeah, so the problem tends to be very much more addressed for the physicians that it's it kind of can be based on how much salary the physician makes. So those that tend to like bill at a higher rate have traditionally had more tools available to them because they can kind of afford the dictation or transcription. So like your primary care physician in the United States traditionally hasn't made as much as maybe like an orthopedic surgeon. So a primary care physician doesn't have traditionally like dictation transcription services or AI tools. What a lot of this recent Gen AI has allowed and provided for these primary care physicians is that they now can have some of these because they couldn't afford the medical scribe that was given to the other specialties.
All right. Well, look, Vince, why don't we talk about your particular product, you know, the technology behind Abstractive Health. Could you just describe it in simple terms?
Yeah, so our technology is really based on natural language processing transformers. So we are taking the numerous amount of clinical notes that are in a patient's medical chart. We find the content that is the most salient using this machine learning engine that we've trained on previous data. And then we summarize it for the physician using technology that is like ChatGPT. Currently, we are using a open source model that is called Llama 2 that was recently made available by Meta. Llama 2 is a similar transformer model to GPT-4. So it works in the same light, and it is very good at predicting the next token or the next word as it is fed source information, which allows it to produce the summaries that we are automatically providing for the physicians.
And I mean, how would it be any different from actually using ChatGPT or another large language model?
Yeah, so where we excel at is that we have fine-tuned Llama 2 on a medical data set through a partnership with Weill Cornell Medicine. And so it specifically knows very well patients' medical information. So we did a process known as supervised learning, where we had the historical charts and then the summaries that were historically written by physicians, and we had it learn how to create these summaries. Based on learning this process, it performs at a much better rate than what ChatGPT would do in creating a summary of a medical chart. The second big thing is that because we have, we're using Llama 2 as an open source version, it is all occurring on our own servers, and we actually do not send medical information via an API to Microsoft or other companies are competing against OpenAI also, like Google. But we don't have these APIs, which healthcare finds very advantageous because then they can keep their medical data safer and it doesn't end up potentially being transmitted to companies that may want to use the data for their own benefits.
Okay, so I can see that this second issue, the need to keep medical data secure, that seems like a very, very concrete reason to choose a system like yours over just using ChatGPT or Bard or something. However, I mean, just if you did a head-to-head comparison of ChatGPT and your Llama 2 system, I mean, I'm guessing that your system, ChatGPT wouldn't spit out nonsense. It would probably do a pretty reasonable job, right? I mean, what would that comparison look like?
So honestly, no one has to date done the full medical chart to create a summary using a service like ChatGPT, mainly because the data problem that most medical facilities wouldn't want to send the patient's full medical chart via. But One of the challenges that you would encounter if you did is that, so our structure, we've have a like proprietary method that will take into account hundreds of thousands of words and find what content we will summarize. You can't just feed 100 to 300,000 words to ChatGPT because there's limits of how many word like the model can like take as input, and it maxes out at about, I believe, 30,000 on the higher end if you pay more. Like if generally it's about 4,000, which if you're using just freehand as an end user ChatGPT, most of the time you're not going to feed in like the whole novel of Moby Dick to summarize. But if you're doing it from a medical standpoint, you as a patient will, and if you are on the more chronic side, you end up in the hospital, you will have hundreds of thousands of words all in these medical notes. And it is literally at the level of a novel of Moby Dick. And so ChatGPT just isn't on a base model like ready to take in all that input. So you would have to first determine what you like, how you would structure it to feed it into ChatGPT and how to summarize it. And at that point, you're creating your own sort of structure in a way. You're building an input model and doing tools similar to what we're doing. So it's like you'd have to build that all out, is what I'm
Now,
saying.
okay, now I would imagine that if somebody's got particularly complex medical notes, then what an AI system potentially could do is not simply summarize the current medical problem, but it could somehow analyze all of the different symptoms of different at different times and come up with some kind of diagnosis that a human physician might not have spotted in the first place. So in other words, it's not just summarizing, it could actually be diagnostic. Is that potentially something that could happen?
Yeah, so you could train a model such as ChatGPT, or like we're using Llama 2, to be diagnostic in nature. Some people are going down approach. We've made it very much in our wheelhouse to only condense information and not be diagnostic. If you go diagnostic, you'll have to go through the FDA regulatory approach, because you're directly impacting medical care, and you're approaching a medical decision making that should be regulated.
So, are there other companies who are going down that diagnostic route with the same kind of technology?
I think the ones that people, they usually focus on a specific disease, and they haven't generally done the whole like gamut of and mainly because the FDA wants you to focus on just presenting machine learning model that has efficacy for a specific disease. So the ones I hear the most is like sepsis is a common machine learning model that is used in healthcare. You can find symptoms ahead of time that would reduce a patient's proclivity of sepsis and getting that while they're in the hospital. And you would likely see positive outcome if you did machine learning to predict sepsis for like with transformers. I'm not aware of the name of any specific company that's doing that, but I know that a number of researchers have focused on that area to
Sure.
and would use a transformer model to figure that out.
Okay, so in the case of obstructive health, are you focusing on particular disease areas or are you aiming to be completely general?
So we focus just on internal medicine, general medicine. We don't do a specific disease area. We actually built in tools in our transformer models that we don't allow the model to infer diagnoses like you were stating. And just based on the numerous conversations we've had with physicians, that they have more or less viewed that that we were talking about at the earlier portion, that the burden and the burnout is from doing like administrative tasks they view, like condensing the information that's already in the medical chart. And they actually want to focus most of their time on the assessment portion or doing the diagnostic action. And so we haven't found it as much of a need to do inference, to take all the symptoms that a patient has and predicting a diagnosis.
Now, if your system were a person, then I would imagine it might be just really wanting to give some diagnostic information, but holding itself back because it knows it's not allowed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so yeah.
My question is, you know, could you? I can imagine if your system could really say what it thought, it would be wanting to be saying something like, well, but you might want to think about this diagnosis, you know. In other words, not saying anything definitive, but maybe making a suggestion. I mean, is that?
That is 100% correct. So yeah, we are going out of our way to, like you said, like we are limiting the person's capability to infer what is the word, like, so it's, in essence, it's machine learning. It wants to say the predicted outcome. And so we are preventing it from doing so. Yeah.
Okay. This seems to me to be a good example of an area where this kind of thing can only be done by machine learning systems. There aren't really any human analogs to this or any kind of even other computational shortcuts. Is that fair to say?
So in the medical industry, they had, and they still do, medical scribes, and they would be having humans create these summaries manually, and they would pay them like 10, 15 bucks per patient or per, like, and it was like this training before you got to med school. So you could see what the medical profession is like, but it's not a very sexy or it kind of puts all the burden that was being on. So you have like your ranks of your attending physician, then your resident, and then your med students, and then your medical scribe. And so it's like putting this workload, just moving it from the attending down all the way to the bottom to the medical scribe. So instead of having the medical scribe do it, it's looking for an AI system to do it. But healthcare has always been pushing this work down the ladder to what they viewed as not hopefully the physician to do it.
Okay, so I guess that's the key comparison, isn't it? The comparison between your system and the medical scribe, and how can a hospital or a physician assess that?
So we perform clinical research assessments, and we have our automated summaries, and we measure them of what a manual summary, like what a physician would write. We did a Likert scale of 1 to 10, and we had board-certified physicians rate them from like 1 to 10, how they performed, and it was comparable to what a physician would manually write. So if you wanted to do these sort of machine learning, like these transformers in the medical profession, you would do assessments like that, where you compare them to what a manual medical scribe would do, or the physician themselves, and see does the AI compare at that level.
And what are the outcomes of those kind of studies, Vince?
So ours was at a 70% quality of what the physician themselves would do, meaning 70% of the time our automated summary would be at the same level that what a physician would manually write. And this was just fully automated and not having a person like review it or make edits. So the medical center, New York Presbyterian, saw this and they viewed it as, well, if we put a physician in the loop to first review the summary, then that could be a usable system. And that's hence why we proceeded forward with talks for a pilot with Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian. So another study that was done recently is Google used MedPalm 2, and they had it take the medical exam, and it got, I believe at this point, an 85%, meaning it says 85% of the questions Google is getting and could pass that med school exam. So that would be like another test of like a physician taking the exam themselves.
Okay, so overall, are you pleased? I mean, this is this is maybe an unfair question, but how would you describe your the degree to which you are pleased with the performance of your system compared to the human equivalents.
Yeah, so we used older models. So we did that study a year ago. Clinical studies take a while. And we used a model called BART that was also from Meta. And the models have advanced dramatically, as everyone has seen with ChatGPT. So we are currently doing a study with Llama 2, and we expect that to even perform higher than that 70%. So we're quite satisfied that we were able to get 70% with older models and expect even better results for using Llama 2.
And I would imagine that the end game here would be to try and have a system that performs in a superior way to human equivalents. Is that true?
Yeah. There's also a lot of evidence that shows that humans more or less expect AI to perform better than, like, incredibly better than a human in order to have complete acceptance of it. So if a human is performing at like a 95% accuracy, they expect the AI to perform at 99%. We just have this expectation that when we have a computer be like solving things for a human, that we want it to go above and beyond. So from like a user acceptance, yeah, we would have that expectation.
Okay, so could you say something about the kind of challenges that you have faced in, first of all, developing these kind of systems, and second of all, getting these systems adopted and accepted?
Yeah, so the first main challenge, in order to really build a summarization tool for physicians, we had to form a partnership with Weill Cornell Medicine. And that took us a few years to get the data sets to show that this would be a solvable problem. Once we had that, the next challenge was accounting for all those words that I was saying earlier, that the medical chart is huge in comparison to summarizing a news article. So we had to create methods in order to handle that. And then because you don't want hallucinations and you want to be very factual in healthcare, that was the next challenge. And so constantly, and like by doing this summarization structure in healthcare, it's just a challenge we encounter, and then we find means to overcome those. I guess the most recent one is running Llama 2. It's a 70 billion parameter, like it's huge, and it requires a large amount of GPU in order to have it function. So we had to negotiate with Amazon for quite some time to get enough GPU to do so. And then we're also working with Weill Cornell Medicine to stand up on their side enough GPU to train it. So it can be challenging just to have enough GPU to fine-tune these models on a medical training data set.
I see. And where do you see the company and the technology going in the next 10 years, say?
Yeah, so
that's probably an unfair question because it is changing so rapidly, but I'm throwing that question at you anyway.
So I view on the company level that we focus initially on doing a summary on the inpatient and the emergency side of healthcare. We've recently won a National Science Foundation grant to do this for primary care physicians on the outpatient side. So over the next year, we'll be doing that same summarization for on the outpatient. So if you go to your family care physician, that individual would also have a summary available to you. I view that we would then, like, so interoperability, we've built this out in Epic, and we're doing so for Cerner and Athena Health. We will shortly be able to be in more or less every EHR system, and the federal government has really provided tools to do so through Smart on Fire. And so that's in our wheelhouse and next goals. In terms of this technology and just GPT 10 in the next probably 10 years, I could see, and there's a few companies I've seen doing this, that drug discovery, you could find specific like your DNA and finding the genetic makeup of it to really find a drug that works very well for you, and have one of these transformer models learn from like the molecules. This is way outside my wheel. I'm not a biology individual, but I've heard, and there's people using it for drug discovery. Seems really cool, and that means. So a lot of cool things in that way.
Right. Okay. Well, look, Vince, just say a couple of quick words about where you are as a company and where, you know, where you're hoping to go in the near term. And then I'll ask my last question. Tell us about where you are as a company.
So we have, like I said, been in existence for a year. So we are an early stage company. We have two main pilots, one with New York Presbyterian and a second with the Department of Health of Abu Dhabi. And we are in conversations to try to get a few other pilots at medical centers. And we have been doing summarization for, like I was saying, discharge summaries on the inpatient side and emergency physicians. And we are looking to expand to other medical centers and grow in that means. We expect in the next year or two, we will hopefully be at probably 5 to 10 medical centers in the United States.
Fantastic. All right, Vince, last question, and that is nothing to do with abstractive health. What would you say your favorite example of medical AI is?
Yeah, so when I was in Las Vegas for a health conference called Health, I saw this demonstration of this company called Echo that is using machine learning and a stethoscope, and they can hear heart murmurs and help the physician with machine learning for the diagnoses in that manner. And I thought it was really neat and cool. And they had gone through the whole FDA process. And a lot of startups and VCs don't invest in medical devices in that manner. So that they had created such a cool device was neat. So I was really impressed at that conference and seeing Echo.
It's fantastic. I hope you also got to get some other kind of fun in Vegas as well, because it's not just about conferences, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we were staying at the Venetian. It was, it's a very nice hotel.
Excellent. Vince, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I really, really enjoyed it. And absolute best of luck with your venture going forward.
Thank you. It was good talking with you too.
Thanks, Vince. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. I'm Felix Beecher. Ping me on LinkedIn for more information on Omdia's services in healthcare technology. See you next time.